Fundraising everywhere.
You need to add me in there.
Hey, and welcome to the Fundraising Everywhere podcast. It's great to have you here. In this episode, we're taking a look at one of our favourite supporter experience on-demand sessions in celebration of our brand new supporter experience conference coming up on Thursday the 16th of May. If you'd like to join us at the conference, you can use promo code EPIPODCAST to get 50% off. Yep, just pop in promo code EPIPODCAST at checkout on our website to get 50% off our brand new supporter experience conference. Now, on to today's episode. Enjoy.
Hi, my name is Camille St. Omer Donaldson, and I am the supporter experience project lead at the British Red Cross. A big thank you to you guys all for joining me today. I'm really grateful that I get the opportunity to share kind of my passion speaking, which is what I'm doing now, with so many other passionate fundraisers, and actually share with so many people why I think dialogue is still such an important part of our relationship with our supporters and improving the supporter experience, but also why it was such an important part in my fundraising journey, and I'm sure so many of you guys as well who would have started off as dialogue either face-to-face or telephone fundraisers yourselves. So a little bit about me is I did start off my fundraising journey as a telephone fundraiser almost 8 years ago now, when I first picked up the telephone and spoke to my very first supporter. I think this is probably where I learned the most about my passion or appreciation or love, don't really like that phrase, but love or appreciation for our supporters, and just how valuable it is to be able to get an insight, I guess, into their world and be able to treat them as individuals, as opposed to kind of my first introduction being them being on a number on a spreadsheet. So that really changed kind of the face of fundraising for me. I then moved to the British Red Cross about 3 years ago, and where I spent my first sort of 2.5 years training face-to-face and telephone agency partners and fundraisers on how to inspire our supporters and speak passionately about the work that we do. And lastly, I guess where I am now as a supporter experience project lead, still dabbling my fingers in all the pies, I managed to work together with my team to pull off our very first bankathon, which involved us getting back to the telephones. And so dialogue has very much been a very kind of prominent part of my fundraising journey, and we'll be exploring that throughout today. But we won't be exploring kind of me and my journey only. What we will be looking at is just some evidence around kind of how the general public feel, firstly, about dialogue fundraising and about dialogue in general and preferred ways of communication. Then we'll be having a little look at what our supporters have come to expect from us, and some top tips around what makes those really great, engaging conversations with our supporters. And then moving on to what I like to call the evolution of dialogue, or the revolution of dialogue, I'm not sure. But we certainly know that the way in which we've used it thus far cannot continue. But how can we start to look at dialogue differently, and how can it work for us? So what this isn't is a session where we totally disregard the digital space and realm, but it's actually about finding a way that both digital and dialogue can work together. Because if, like me, your strength is in the gift of the gab, and you're not a community fundraiser, but you do sit within individual giving or direct marketing teams, there's still a space for us. And I think there's still many ways and plenty of opportunities that we can use our voice. So let's have a look at those. What do our supporters say? So earlier this year, the British Red Cross worked together with Opinion, who surveyed and polled over 2,000 adults across the UK to find out a little bit about what the general public think about communication. So the most common channels, I think, as to be expected, that people use to communicate with organisations in the last 12 months is indeed email. 57% of those surveyed used email to communicate. However, 35% of people who we surveyed are also still preferring to use the telephone and face-to-face as their method of communication for the types of organisation that they support. So it does differ by age. Obviously, 18 to 34-year-olds have been more likely to communicate with organisations via social media. The next thing we looked at was the preferred kind of method of communication by quality. And so when we looked at the quality of the communications people were having per channel, we found that face-to-face was still rated the best quality interaction, with 81% rating their most recent face-to-face interaction with an organisation as either excellent or good. And I think kind of one of the least shocking, but looking specifically at charities, was that actually 37% of those who communicated with the charity over the telephone in the last 12 months was actually said that they was more likely to make a donation to that organisation as a result. I think what surprised me was that this was more common amongst 18 to 34-year-olds who traditionally use social media but felt really inspired and moved to make a donation over the telephone when it came to charities, in comparison to the age group of supporters that I was certainly more familiar, I guess, with speaking to over the telephone. And I guess, you know, whilst email rules the roost, I think there is still some evidence around and benefits around kind of communicating with those supporters, various different supporters using telephone and face-to-face. What we still know, and I think isn't a surprise to anyone, 79% of the public still feel that marketing over the telephone or face-to-face, kind of using those dialogue fundraising methods, still find those pretty intrusive. And that isn't new to us. But I guess the question then is, so what? Who cares? Certainly I care, and I really would encourage you guys to care too, because I would have never got into fundraising if I couldn't use my voice to communicate with our supporters. And I think that's probably true for so many of the people that I know that are in the fundraising sector now. And yes, whilst many prefer to communicate with organisations that they love and trust, face-to-face or over the telephone, we do need to listen to the fact that many still find this way as a kind of fundraising tool and marketing tool, incredibly intrusive. So let's surprise our supporters. I think that's the next step. Mass supporters, especially within our kind of individual giving realm, have come to expect that the only time that we'll use dialogue is to fundraise, is to actually make an ask and ask them for money. What if we were to reimagine the way we use dialogue? Fundraising, of course, as we know, isn't just about asking for money. And there are many ways that we can continue to improve the supporter experience by using these methods, both, I think, with our kind of individual giving supporters and en masse as well. So what does that look like? Well, for me, I think it looks like the evolution, as I like to call it, of dialogue. I feel like I should have had like Darwin's evolution of man as an image, but I prefer the kind of Bitmoji instead. But three things, in my opinion, that are kind of really quick and easy ways that we can start to reimagine how we use the telephone or face-to-face to interact with our supporters are the following. So firstly, when gathering insights, we all want to get to know our supporters better. We all want to have opportunities to speak with them and hear about what's going on in their world. Using the telephone to do so, or face-to-face as a way of interviewing and speaking with our supporters, is a great way and a great tool to use, aside from kind of just sending those surveys. The other thing that we tried at the British Red Cross was indeed our very first Thankathon. And so perhaps as I go through the rest of the presentation, that's something that you think that you and your organisation could try, calling up some of your supporters and actually giving them a bit of a surprise, I think, where you get an opportunity to say thank you. And lastly, not something specific to the British Red Cross, but an example that I quite like from the RNLI, where they were using kind of their face-to-face fundraisers as vehicles for kind of delivering and raising awareness and delivering information, as well as to kind of make sure that they were recruiting new supporters and gaining those all important funds. So firstly, looking at insights and interviews. So as I mentioned, kind of we're all trying to find out a little bit more about our supporters' world. And talking to your supporters and asking for feedback is a great way that we can do that. So we can use the telephone not only to find out more information, but to start building and developing that relationship. I know it can be quite nerve-wracking, I guess, asking for feedback, and supporters can be incredibly honest. But I think as a sector, it's definitely needed. And we've certainly seen huge value from being able to understand our supporters and know them a little bit better. And I think also giving them an opportunity to know us a little bit better too. And kind of some top tips that I've learned from doing them, and also that I think could be quite useful if you were thinking of doing some insight interviews. Firstly, is that awkward silence actually isn't that awkward. It can feel quite nerve-wracking when you're on the other end of a phone speaking to a supporter and asking them questions about their world, about their life. And I think it probably feels quite strange for them too. But actually leaving silence can really prompt your supporter to start letting you know more. And sometimes I have to cover my mouth like that, I think, to stop myself speaking. But it actually allowed the conversation to open up a lot more. I think the other thing that I found quite useful was actually asking questions about their world. And when I first kind of was involved in insight interviews, I think the ambition and the goal was slightly different, whereas I want to find out how they feel about the Red Cross and what they think about the last mailing that we sent them, or what they think about us asking them if they can support on the telephone or whatever it might be. And actually, when you change the goal and you make it, I just want to speak to our supporters and find out a little bit about their world, all of those things that you want to find out will probably come up anyway. They know that you're the organisation that's calling them is a charity. They probably know that you want to find out some things about their relationship with them. But actually posing it in a way where you're asking questions about their world means that they get to tell you what role your organisation plays in their world, which kind of is a lot kind of more beneficial, I guess, insight for you to have as an organisation. And lastly, just remembering always to close that feedback loop with your supporters if you are running insight interviews. So something like, you said X and we did Y as a result. Just so that your supporters know that you're actually actioning that insight. There's nothing worse than having insight that isn't actioned, because then you're just collecting information. The next way I think that we've been able to reimagine potentially dialogue is probably one of my faves, because it was my first project in the supporter experience team. And that was through using the telephone for our Thankathon. So we called up, I think, over 1,000 supporters earlier this year. And we called our supporters to say a really, really big thank you. And we got people from across the organisation involved, of all levels, kind of job levels, right up to our kind of senior leadership team, including also getting some of our volunteers involved. And I think it was a really great way to get many people who hadn't experienced dialogue or used dialogue before to speak to supporters engaged, especially those who perhaps work in service delivery, and really get them connected and closer to understanding who our supporters are and hearing some amazing stories about why our supporters support the work that we do. So some key things was kind of getting everyone involved. The more people that were involved, the more people we could call, but also the kind of more we could promote our supporters and get people to understand who they are. Something else that we did was around confidence training and supporting materials. So we ran lots of training sessions in the lead up to the Thankathon, especially for those who had never used the telephone as a way to communicate with supporters before. So really giving them that confidence, conversational tips and tools to be able to have really inspiring and engaging conversations with our supporters. There were no call to actions. We didn't make any asks during that week, as we called it, our supporter celebration week. And instead, we used it as an opportunity to genuinely and truly thank our supporters for what they had done for us. And I think it really took a lot of our supporters by surprise that when they answered the telephone, most of them were saying, you know, if you're asking about money, which is something I'm so familiar with as a telephone fundraiser myself, and you're asking about money, I'm not going to be able to give any, or I don't have any. And actually, it was really an amazing feeling. We got feedback from our staff to be able to say, actually, this isn't the reason we're calling today. The reason we are calling today is to say a really big thank you. So that was quite a moment of, I guess, surprise and delight for our supporters. And lastly, of course, ensuring that we are compliantly, we are compliantly calling on supporters. So we only call supporters who we had telephone consent for. And again, similar to the insight interviews, being able to close that feedback loop. So where a supporter requested something in those calls, we sent those as special actions back to our supporter care team so that they could action them. Again, demonstrating to our supporters, we are listening to you. This is truly two-way. And, you know, you are a part of our movement. Lastly, as I mentioned before, the RNLI's face-to-face example, I think it's wonderful because face-to-face fundraisers, I think, have been saying for such a long time just how much of them they are a massive part of the organisations that they fundraise on behalf of. They are ambassadors for the causes that they fundraise for, that know almost everything about that organisation, and they're on the ground and they're meeting people every single day. They're existing in their community. I think it was really, really a great example of utilising the knowledge and the skill of our face-to-face fundraisers, not only in this instance for the RNLI to raise additional funds. I think they inspired over 18,000, I think, new supporters last year. But they also managed to ensure that over 200,000 children and adults received relevant safety messages on local beaches, at lifeboat station, at events throughout the UK. Last year as well. So not only were they saving more lives by raising more funds, but they were saving more lives by actually using their skill and communicating with people on the ground within their community and sharing the knowledge and awareness of how to keep people safe. So lastly, I think just my top tips. So the future of dialogue, or is there a future for dialogue, I think has to be one that is truly two-way and truly considers the supporter's role in the conversation a lot more. Things have changed so much from when I started off fundraising 8 years ago, where we followed a kind of typical script, and there were opportunities for our supporters to either agree or disagree, but not much opportunity for our supporters to really engage in conversation. And I think using dialogue going forward, we really are going to have to mean what we say and kind of walk the walk when we talk about being supporter-centric, and allowing not only a kind of space for a few prompts here and there, but space for genuine conversation with our supporters. The other thing I think that the future of dialogue really depends on is demonstrating and being able to show supporters what's in it for them, what impact that they're having. If supporters understand the impact and the role that they have to play in the conversation, I think they'll find these conversations a lot more beneficial. If there is a purpose behind why we're specifically calling that group of supporter, sorry, those groups of supporters, or that particular person here, is that because we know that they have donated to our Syria appeal potentially before? So it's really kind of personalising it on a granular level and making sure the information is relevant to them. And lastly, just surprise and delight your supporters every once in a while. Ensure that your conversations aren't always surrounding an ask. We can use the telephone and face-to-face interaction to do so much more. And I think we really need to start exploring what that could look like. So I think, just to end, dialogue isn't dead, in my opinion, nor do I ever think it could be. But I do think it needs to be reimagined. And hopefully I've given you some useful examples of how we can start reimagining how you use it.
Thank you so much for listening to the Fundraising Everywhere podcast. If you're enjoying this podcast, why not share it with a fundraising friend? And if you would like to give us a little like or subscribe, it really helps more fundraisers like you find us. Thank you so much. See you next time.